I am your host, Lee Benz, the Home Scholar, and I'm so glad that you're joining me for this presentation. I'm sure it's going to help you feel comfortable in your role as the guidance counselor, regardless of the abilities of your children. I think it's only in the fictional town of Lake Wobegon where all children are above average, and too often homeschool parents judge their own or others' children based on their relative position on the bell-shaped curve. And as homeschoolers, sometimes we ignore the uniqueness and individuality of what makes life more meaningful, and frankly, what makes homeschooling more effective. So no matter where your child falls compared to the national average, you as the parent and the best guidance counselor can guide your student into a perfect fit college and career. And that is where Hal and Melanie can come alongside. So let me introduce you to my friends, Hal and Melanie Young, who are going to be speaking today. They are very sincere, compassionate, caring people. I've met with them often. She and I have shared tears together as we've talked about how moved we've been as we've been helping other parents. Their presentations are always packed to the gills, so I know that they have something important to say, and they'll be saying it in a very engaging way. So I hope you're all snuggled in to learn today. Now, besides being charming and genuine in real life, Hal and Melanie are authors and speakers. They're parents of 6 sons and 2 daughters. They start with biblical foundations, and then they work to put those principles into practice, so you'll get something very practical as well. Hal and Melanie Young are award-winning authors of Raising Real Men and also the book called My Beloved and My Friend, How to Be Married to Your Best Friend Without Changing Spouses. I think that's hilarious. Anyway, so I'd love for you all, after you have shared the different concerns that you have about your children, I'd love for you to join in on chat and just welcome Hal and Melanie Young here today so that they can give us their wisdom and help us learn how to homeschool high school and get our college into our children into a perfect fit college. So I want to say thank you, Hal and Melanie, for being here today. I really appreciate the wisdom that you're going to be sharing.
Well, thank you so much, Lee. It's a pleasure to be here. And hello, everybody. I'm Hal.
And I'm Melanie.
And we are glad to be here and hope that we'll make the next hour or 2 hours or 3 or 4 if we can keep Lee up.
I don't think so.
Make this a good and a productive time for everybody.
We're going to jump right in and get started. Today, we're going to be talking about struggling learners in high school and college. And the first thing we want to do is give you some hope because... And yeah, please come subscribe. We've got some free resources out there. We'll be sending you more free resources by email. Go to raisingrealmen.com/collegehelp and get some free stuff. And I hope it'll be a blessing to you. Before we really get into the practical stuff, we want to give you some hope.
Can I introduce the first couple of our kids?
Sure.
Well, okay. So let me tell you how we started out. We started out homeschooling. We read the books that said boys develop more slowly, start slow with boys. And our first child learned to read when he was 4. And our second and our third children were precocious readers. And we thought, homeschooling is wonderful. We're brilliant. Our kids are great. And then we were blessed with our fourth child. And the story was very different.
With our fourth son, everything was hard. And I couldn't understand it because he was clearly bright and intelligent. He was a wonderful kid, a lot of fun to be around. He clearly understood the world around him, but he struggled in all things academic. And in fact, Sam, and I can say Sam because he and I speak about this together, Sam didn't learn to read till he was 11. And honestly, at 13, 14, his handwriting looked like a first grader. He couldn't spell 3-letter words. And I really deep down inside wondered, is this kid ever going to be able to live independently? I was so worried about that. Now he's a sophomore at college and he's on a full ride academic scholarship and he's on the president's list, which is better than the dean's list. He was freshman class president and he's doing great. And so I want to give you hope that even the child that you wonder, I don't think we can ever get to the point that this kid can go to college. He's never going to learn enough that he can go to college. You may be very surprised because Our Sam went from at 14, struggling like crazy. At 17, he was reading ancient philosophers for fun. And so things change, and especially for boys in the high school years, because the high school years for boys are a time that boys really come into their own academically. They have a huge mental growth spurt. So don't despair. There's hope. Now let's talk about what to do to get there.
Because there's some practical things that you can do, that you ought to do, that you're going to need to do if you've got one of these special kids that has got maybe a little twist in their learning process. Okay. So we're going to talk about some things that we learned along the way, because we've had now actually, I guess, three of our kids have got one challenge or another.
The first thing to do is to look at high school. Somehow you've got to get them up to speed. They've got to get into college prep coursework. And I find that the most challenging thing is moms and accommodations. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But you're going to need to use audiobooks. You're going to need to let them dictate things. You're going to need to make accommodations. You're also going to need to not aim too low. It's really easy when you've struggled to limit your dreams for a child, to limit what you expect them to do. And yet we have seen kids sometimes make years of progress in 1 year of the calendar. And so don't aim too low.
Now, it's really important to get them tested. And some people say, well, I don't want them labeled. Well, actually, kind of you do, to be honest, because one of the reasons that people shy away from the labeling thing is because of the social impact in the institutional school environment. But you've avoided all of that. You don't have to worry about the peer groups. And really, if you get a diagnosis, let's not call it a label, let's call it a diagnosis, that opens up so many doors that will level the playing field and allow your brilliant child who learns differently to display the brilliance God gave him.
Exactly. And so if you have a child that it might possibly want to go to college, you're going to need to have them tested, preferably tested once earlier, but definitely tested by eighth or ninth grade at the latest. And it needs to be an official educational psychologist, somebody with the letters after their name. Mm-hmm. And if they've had any testing at all in any other venue, be sure to mention it to the educational psychologist so that they can reference it in their write-up. And you want to ask them, don't just give me the scores, but give me a diagnosis. And they're going to, we received like an 11 or 13 page paper from the educational psychologist that tested our son, detailing all the results of the testing and what we knew from it.
One of the things that's really valuable about this, I think, is that oftentimes when they have a learning struggle, it's in one area, but it impacts everything else. So like if you have a dyslexic child who's behind the curve on the reading, it's easy to let that big truck in the highway slow up everything. But in fact, there's ways to get around it so that they can progress at a normal pace in other areas while you figure out the reading problem.
In fact, it helped our son a lot to see the results of the testing, because he saw that he was at the top of the curve in several areas. Mm-hmm. And he was at the bottom of the curve in other areas. But when he saw that he really was smart enough to do this stuff, he just said, okay, you mean I've just got to overcome these challenges I've got? And I said, yeah. He said, okay, I'll do it. So testing is valuable sometimes to give your child hope that they can overcome it, but it's you've got to do it if they're headed for college. Now, you also need to write up an individual educational plan for your student. And I know you think, why? Well, because you're going to need it to get accommodations on the college entrance exams and at college. So what you'll need to do is write out all the different things that you do to teach this child. If this child dictates things instead of writing them out, put that down. Reference the testing in your plan, because he has a diagnosis of other. And when you get that testing back, don't freak out, because it typically won't say dyslexia or dysgraphia anymore. Now it says non-specified learning disability in the area of reading is what they say instead of dyslexia, whatever. But when you write up your educational plan, say, because of this diagnosis, then this is what we do. I don't time his test, or I give him extra time. I allow him to dictate. I buy him audiobooks. Detail every accommodation you make, because the testing companies and the college will want to give him similar accommodations to what you're using at home in his normal classroom.
This program is called an IEP, and if your child is in an institutional school, that is what they're going to do with the special needs students, is they're going to write up an individualized educational plan that does exactly what you just described. And that's to communicate to the teachers going forward, just like you want to communicate to the teachers and to the testing authorities as your child goes forward.
Now, how do you get high school done with a child that has struggled their whole life academically? Well, you got to shore up their weaknesses. There is a certain level of math they're going to need to survive in college. And so you've got to get through that. You may need to find a different way than you've taught your other children. You know, you might have used Saxon math or something all the way through, and this child can't get it with Saxon. Or you might have used Life of Fred all the way through, and this child can't get it with Life of Fred. They all learn differently. So make sure you get them in a program that they understand, that they can understand it by. And you may have to experiment some, but shore up their weaknesses so that they have the reading, the writing, and that doesn't necessarily mean handwriting, but composition, and the math that they need that'll be foundational for their work in college.
Now, you want to focus on the strengths, and this is doubly important when you have a child who has a learning difficulty, because everybody focuses on, oh, they're behind. But really and truly, they've got talents in other areas, and so it's important to not only to develop those, but to really encourage them to remember, hey, look, maybe you're not reading as early as your brother did, but boy, you've got a brilliant mind for art or for business, or your math skills are incredible. So you need to, that's really important for your child's self-image and their encouragement to struggle forward on the things that are harder.
And that is so critical, because preserving these kids' confidence is one of the biggest things you can do to help them succeed in life. And so get them out there doing what they love while you're shoring up those weaknesses, okay? Now, the biggest problem that I see homeschool moms having with teaching a struggling learner in high school is accommodation. For some reason, most of us, I was the same way. Most of us have it in our heads that doing accommodations is cheating. Now, what do I mean by accommodations? I mean letting them show that they have learned the material, or letting them learn the material in a different way than other students. Now, I want you to think about this. If you had a child who was born with a birth defect and his leg did not work properly, would you feel bad about giving him a crutch so that he could walk? No, of course not. Well, then all that you're doing when you're accommodating your child is giving them a level playing field. You're giving them a way to show their knowledge. Oh, you're giving them a way to learn. So if you have a child who has dysgraphia, that means that he or she struggles with writing. Well, you know, I've written several books, and I don't think we've written one word of them by hand, have we, Hal?
No, we have. And you know? It's important that whatever testing or evaluation is done is testing the subject is testing. Now, what do you mean by that is, let's say that you have a child, okay, we'll use the dyslexic example, who has trouble reading. Well, history should not be a challenge on reading only. It shouldn't be like a reading test. It should be, do you understand history?
And so you get them an audiobook, and you allow them to learn that way. You want to level the playing ground so that your child can share what they've learned in a way that they can express it, so they can learn in a way that is easy for them. And that's not cheating. It's leveling the playing ground. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you've got to encourage them and praise them and help them. And these kids are going to need a lot of encouragement, in many ways, more encouragement than your other kids did, because they know they're struggling and they know they're having to do things differently than their siblings. And so you're going to be there to be their cheerleader. And, you know, I have two adult sons that have learning disabilities, and both of them have said that their fondest memories of childhood are the encouragement that they got from me just trying to keep them from quitting. You know?
Well, honestly, let me give all of you an encouragement right now. Your decision to homeschool your child who has learning difficulties is a tremendous encouragement and protection to them right now.
Yes.
Okay. The fact that you have taken them out of a hostile social environment, because trust me, you remember school, don't you? You remember how kids that were different in any way were treated,
yeah.
and your child would be bearing that burden if they had to sit in the classroom every day.
Yes.
You've taken that away from them and given them a loving environment. So hats off to you. Big round of applause for the homeschooling parent.
Yeah, you're a hero. Now, let's talk about extracurriculars and outside classes.
Okay.
It is super important for homeschoolers that our kids have at least one or two classes that we didn't teach them, because they're going to need academic recommendations for college. They're going to need someone who can speak to their academic ability. Now, in order to make that work for a struggling learner, is you've got to contact the teacher or the leader of the extracurricular in advance, privately, and request accommodations. Now, the cool thing is that we have a law, the Americans with Disabilities Act, and anybody who is opening up their class or their activity to the general public has to accommodate you. And so, but you can make it easy for them to say yes by offering help. So if you have a child that's taking a test and he's going to need to be able to dictate his answers, then you say, I have a child who has a learning disability. Now, you want to use the word disability in this case.
Mm-hmm.
You, with your child, you can say learning glitch. You can say learning challenge, struggling learner. But in this case, you want to use the word disability because that cues in the person that they have to accommodate you.
That's right. It's not the Americans with Learning Glitches Act.
Right.
Okay.
But then say, I know that's asking a lot. I would be glad to provide someone for them to dictate it to. And so provide that help if you on your own if you can.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of kids are afraid to be involved. And sometimes moms are afraid to be involved because we're so protective of these kids. Neither of you needs to be experiencing fear. And you can get through, you can get past that fear by thinking it all through in advance.
Now, just think about what is it that your child is struggling with and how does that play out in a group setting? You know, one of the things that was a real nightmare for our struggling learner, name tags.
Yeah.
Honestly, because everybody, they throw the name tags out on the table, throw out the markers and say, write your name down here. Well, he could write his name, but man, his handwriting looked like he was years and years out of step. And so, you know, something as simple as that, keying in an older brother, one of his older brothers stepped up and he would always sign his name tag first and say, here, Sam, I'll sign yours up for you too. And he would just write it out like it was just a matter of course. That goes so far, really critical. So just think about the social implications, just the normal process. You know, are they going to have round robin reading?
Are they going to have to fill out a registration form?
Mm-hmm.
Will they need to write something? Think it all through. Talk it through with your child. Role play things.
Mm-hmm.
Role play, you know, what if they forget that you're supposed to get accommodations? How do you handle that? Role play it with them. Now, when you ask your teachers of outside classes or the people in charge of extracurriculars for recommendations, ask them to tell not only what is great about your child, but to give an example of a time they showed that.
Mm-hmm.
Because those kind of recommendation letters are the most powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to say a kid is great. It's way more powerful to say this kid forwards conversations in the class. I remembered when we were discussing this and they asked this question and it made my classroom just flow so much better.
Mm-hmm.
That's a much more believable recommendation.
Okay.
Now, you're getting through high school. You're looking forward. How do you get into college?
There was a gasp of intake breath when you put that slide up. You're thinking,
yes.
This child is not reading. What are you talking about college?
Yeah, we're going to talk about
That's
college.
That's crazy talk.
It's not. Like we said, our son's doing great at college. The first hurdle that you're going to have to face, though, besides getting high school done, is how do you get through the college admissions test? And honestly, for homeschoolers, college admissions tests are pretty essential because when an admissions officer looks at a bunch of transcripts,
mm-hmm.
he knows what kind of school most of those transcripts come from.
Well, you know, I mean, he can look at it and, excuse me, he knows that Cary High School is top flight and has all the best programs. And he knows that maybe Brogdon Road High School is really kind of low key and not very demanding. So he can kind of parse out the applications a little bit and say, these are the really advanced students. These are maybe case by case. And then a homeschooler, who knows? They don't have any reputation for your school. And so it's really important to have some sort of outside agency, your test scores, or an outside extracurricular class to prove that, yeah, this student is just as brilliant as the grades his mama gave him.
And so they're going to need to take the college admissions test. There are a few colleges that are test optional, that they will allow students not to turn in tests, but to turn in a portfolio of materials instead. But not every college is going to allow that option. Mm-hmm. The good news about college admissions tests is they can get better at it. You know, as I've mentioned before, we have a friend who didn't test well enough to get into the College of Her Dreams. After following the Ziggy method for a number of weeks, she not only got in, but got a scholarship. What is the Ziggy method? It's named after someone who was a common poster on a college admissions forum that was online for many, many years. And what Ziggy recommended is that they do many practice tests, that they do like a full section of the practice test, and then they go back and they grade it, but they read the explanations for each question. Because one of the hardest things about the college admissions test is learning how they think.
Well, test taking is a skill, and the college admissions test, the SAT and the ACT, have a certain style to them, and you need to be comfortable with that. Your student needs to be comfortable, you know, putting themselves in the test writer's mind. And so practicing is really just a matter of learning to speak their language.
They can also get better through the use of apps. Most kids, by the time they're 16 or so, have a smartphone. There are a bunch of apps that will deliver an ACT or an SAT question to them every day. And that's a great way just to keep it flowing day after day. But what we need to talk about is getting accommodations, because I know if you're like I was, you're thinking there is no way on this planet that my child can show up in a classroom full, you know, a gym full of 500 kids and take the SAT on a time schedule. Mm-hmm. I felt the same way. Mm-hmm. You can get accommodations on the SAT and the ACT.
Mind blown. How do you do this?
Yeah. First of all, remember, you have been their teacher. Now you're the guidance counselor, okay? And so you're going to have to hunt this down yourself. What you're going to need is the correct form for that test requesting accommodations. Mm-hmm. You're going to have up-to-date, that means eighth or ninth grade at the latest, up-to-date testing by an educational psychologist. We talked about that earlier. Mm-hmm. You're going to have that educational plan showing the accommodations you've used, like we talked about earlier. For the ACT, you're going to need the signature of whatever nearby high school's testing coordinator is going to administer it. And you're going to have to work with the guidance counselors, and that's hard.
And they're going to be looking for the exact same documents. They're going to be looking for some educational testing, and they're going to be looking for your IEP. And so those are important to get.
And IEP is a term used by the public schools, and it has a lot of legal stuff. It's not really an IEP, but your individual plan, your educational plan, and you're going to need a lot of patience. I will tell you that the SAT is much easier to get accommodations for than the ACT, and much easier to work with for homeschoolers. The ACT was a pain in the neck. The SAT was much friendlier and easier. And most colleges nationally will accept either one. And so I recommend that you get both of them. And because you don't know which one your child will do better in, but probably if you need accommodations, they're probably going to do better on the SAT because they're likely to get more accommodations. Now, because you'll need patience, ideally you want to start this process in fall of their junior year, because it will take 7 to 16 weeks to get accommodations approved. And so you don't want to start this in fall of their senior year if you can help it. If you're there already, you play the ball where it lies. Mm-hmm. But generally, you would start in fall of their junior year. Now, let me flip over to the next slide. Now, there's a range of accommodations that are available. they can get extended time, 50%. That means if they would be allowed 30 minutes, they would, for a section, they'd be allowed 45 minutes. Or 100%, where if it was a 30-minute test, they'd be allowed an hour. Other accommodations, they might be allowed to use a computer to type their essay or to take the test on the computer instead of writing. They may be allowed a scribe. Our son was given a scribe that could, because he's severely dyslexic, and the scribe could note down his responses to make sure he didn't, you know, mix up the where the bubble, which bubble he was supposed to mark, and to dictate his essay. He might, your child, if they have an issue with their sight, they might get a large print version or even someone to read it aloud to him. They might be able to be tested in a smaller group, or they might need more breaks. You know, they can get any one of these accommodations or all of them.
You know, this is something you got to tell all your kids, whether they struggle or not. When you are in a test situation, use what's available. If they give you a break, take the break. If they give you an hour to finish, take the hour, because you don't get bonus points for rushing ahead or being the first out of the room or for skipping a break. Nobody even sees that. And you are depriving yourself of the opportunity to finish your work or check your work. So take every example they give you.
And you are going to have to stay on it. They might test them on a different day. And it's amazing the things that will fall through the cracks. You know, we had a problem with the ACT because the local school district, the local high school, and in North Carolina, normally high schools and homeschoolers have zero contact. So this was really challenging to manage. But they decided what day they would test him and never told me. Oh. They just assumed I would call. And I missed it because they didn't call. So you're going to have to stay on everything. You're going to have to call out. You're going to have to be the persistent person.
Okay, so what if your school won't help? And I saw a question come up just a minute ago.
We have had this happen. In fact, one of mine just told me they wouldn't do it. Well, in that case, your first line of defense is your local school board.
And, you know, here's the thing we got to kind of keep in mind. I mean, we all go mama bear and papa bear for our kids, all right? And that's good. They need a mama bear, papa bear. But we need to recognize a little bit from the other perspective. Things fall through the crack because Scott as counselors and everybody else have got a billion things to take care of. And we are the odd ducks in the flock. And so we do have to kind of be advocates and remind them they're not always malicious. Sometimes they are.
Yeah.
But a lot of times they're just forgetful, or we were just so unusual they couldn't fit us into their pattern. So go into your school board. You know what? School board's your authority. And this is a great chance for dad to step into the picture. Because you know what? Dad, you show up in coat and tie. You are a voter, and school boards respond to voters. Believe me, they do. And so, you know, it sometimes you have to appear, be respectful, be polite, but be firm.
I found that just even sending an email to a couple of school board members that we knew blew it all out of the water. They within probably 30 minutes of sending that email, the head of testing for the entire district was trying to get in touch with me.
That's good, because they may not respond to the parent, but they sure respond to the school board that hired them.
Yes.
Okay.
Another avenue of appeal is the Office of Services for Students with Disabilities at the SAT or ACT companies. And you can call and ask to speak. You can Google and you know where the office is, and call them and say, I have a student that has a learning disability and I can't find someone to test them, or the school won't work with me. And they have a lot at stake here. And because they want you to test, they want your money, but they also don't want that reputation of not helping students with disabilities, nor do they want a lawsuit. And so they will contact the school themselves and often talk the schools into helping you. Another thing you can do is to try another school. In many states that don't have any contact between homeschoolers and the high schools, you may not even know what school district you're in or what attendance district you're in. You can contact a different, like we're kind of equidistant between two different high schools. I've worked with both of them at different times. Another thing you can do is go to a private school. Often private schools and Christian schools are more willing to help you just because a lot of them are doing it as a ministry. So, you know, try another school. But it's going to depend on you to assume that balls will be dropped mm-hmm. and to
be polite but persistent. And you know what? You may need to come at this and start it early, like we said, start early in the process. And when you ask a question, when you send a message or leave a phone call, make a note on your calendar that I'm going to check back in 3 days or I'm going to check back on Monday, because you just want to let them know that you are watching, that you are going to persist, and keep reminding them, because since you're an odd person, you're not going to fit into their usual pattern. Just assume they're going to overlook you somehow.
Yes. Okay. Now, transcripts. You may already know this, but your transcripts need to be short and sweet. One page, front only, and it needs to look pretty much like your average high school transcript.
Well, consider a college admissions counselor is going to get not hundreds, thousands of applications, and they're going to have to be able to scan down there real quick and say, do I see 4 English? Do I see 4 math? Do I see 2 science? Or whatever their standard is, they need to be able to look down there and see. They don't need a 6-word description of your literature course. They need to say English lit, American lit.
They definitely don't need a whole paragraph, which many of us homeschoolers, we're so used to having to prove ourselves. We think we're going to have to prove ourselves on the transcript. And we've seen transcripts 10 pages long. Nobody's going to read that. And so you don't go into a paragraph long description of how you teach math. You say Algebra 1 or Honors Algebra 1. Mm-hmm. The administrator is going to sign it. That's maybe mom, maybe dad. One thing that you need to know for kids that are struggling is you can organize it chronologically or by subject. And this is something that we're going to be doing this year because I have a child who became very ill and pretty much lost a year of high school. And so he's going to graduate a year late. And rather than, you know, create all the questions of organizing it chronologically, this is 9th grade classes, 10th grade classes, 11th grade classes, we're going to organize it by subject. Here's his math classes. Here are his English classes, to make it less obvious about that missing year and let them see his qualities before they ask the questions.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have the right to assign grades, okay? You're the instructor. In fact, you run the school, so you can assign grades by whatever method works the best to reflect your student's actual ability. So if you got a student who struggles with testing, but you know they know the material, you can structure your grading on class projects, class participation, oral exams. There's many different ways you can show that you have evaluated this student and they proved that they got it.
Homeschool moms tend to be harsher than teachers. Grade inflation is rampant in the public schools. And so as a result, what we hear from college admissions officers is that homeschool moms tend to be too harsh. You know, instead, think about it this way. If you have a child who, hey, he knows the subject, he's got it, no problems, he should probably get an A. If you have a child who knows it pretty well, you know, he doesn't have it completely, knows it pretty well, he should get a B. If he's got kind of average performance, but there's a good many gaps, a C. And a child who doesn't get it at all, he didn't pass. Maybe he tries again. And, you know, many colleges, when they take a course again, that course, you get the final grade, the first grade is dropped. You can do that too on your transcript. If they have to take Algebra 2 twice, just put that the second time on the transcript, okay? Mm-hmm. You can base your grades on their test, on their daily work, on their lab reports, on their presentations, on discussion with you, on whatever best shows their knowledge. Because some kids are going to be great at tests. You can give them the grade that's on their final exam. Some kids are going to be horrible at tests, but they know the stuff cold, then you want to grade everything, all the extra stuff too. You're in charge. And the transcript should reflect your child's mastery of the subject and really nothing else.
You know, maybe this might help. You are communicating. This is your message from your school to the college that they attend. And so you want to speak college ease. The college is going to open its bleary eyes and look at your transcript and say, did this student take enough courses? Did they understand the material when they got it? And that's really all you're trying to communicate. And so don't say, well, we only counted 98 to 100 as an A in our class because we're rigorous. Well, you know what? There's no school in the nation that's doing that to their students. And so your student may be suffering from a B when other students would have gotten a solid A for the same work.
That's not fair.
It's not. It doesn't do your student any good.
Now, if you sign up for the downloads that we're going to tell you about at the beginning, we'll tell you again at the end. Mm-hmm. We'll send you a sample transcript so you can see how to put these things into effect. Okay?
You so much want the sample transcript. You do.
All right. Now, applying to colleges. Mm-hmm. You need to research those colleges, okay? You're going to need to look at a whole raft of colleges, a bunch of them. How many? Way more than you think. Mm-hmm. Especially if your child has an unusual major. Or if you don't have the money to pay the full freight, you know, if you're looking for scholarship money, they're going to have to apply to a lot of colleges. Now, those colleges need to be on a range. You need some that are safeties.
The safeties are the ones you know that your student can get in. They just breeze right in the door. They're going to walk right in. They'll be overqualified, if anything. So that's kind of your backstop. If everything goes wrong, at least I know they can go to this whatever safety college is. A match is one that is really a good close fit for your students' interests and abilities, okay? And so, you know, those are the ones that are going to be in the average part of your bell curve. And then the reach is like, man, if only I could get into college X. You know, that's your one application to Harvard or some, you know, the prestige college that maybe I could squeak in. But just don't invest everything in the top of the range because you might find all the doors closed. So get a range of colleges that you apply to, some that are a shoe-in, a lot that are a good match, and then, you know, a few dream colleges too.
Make sure you have at least one safety that your child would be happy to go to, mm-hmm. that they're certain to get into, and that you're certain to be able to afford because you may need it. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, applying to college is different for a child who's a struggling learner. Mm-hmm. It is perfectly acceptable for them to dictate their applications or essays to you. Perfectly acceptable to you or to a sibling or to dad or to grandma. That is perfectly acceptable because that's a normal accommodation that you would give them in school. Now, there's a lot of questions about whether to reveal or not to reveal a learning disability in admissions. I think it depends. To some degree, some of it may be part of their story. You know, for one of our children, it was part of his story. You know, he wrote an absolutely flat, amazing essay when he was applying to one college in particular about his disgust when he finally learned to read at his friend's not loving reading and how he just, you know, his frustration that they didn't understand the worlds that had just opened up to him. And so it may be a part of their story. It may be something that they want to share because it explains who they are. Sometimes though, you might want to wait to reveal. It might be evident. It might not be evident. If it's not evident, you might want to wait. Generally, it's not going to matter that much in admissions because most colleges are quite familiar with kids that are what we call 2E. They are twice exceptional. They have learning challenges, but they are super gifted on the other side.
They're smart kids who have a struggle.
Yeah.
Too. Okay.
Be aware that scholarship deadlines are often way earlier.
Oh, yeah, because a lot of colleges have rolling admissions, and it's just like it feels like it's a big fuzzy cloud. But honest to goodness, the scholarships, you know, maybe the college will accept your application until February or March, but scholarship often are in October, maybe as early as October 1st. So you want to apply early if you want to get in the pool for financial aid.
Yes. And expect, you know, we tell all parents of seniors, this is going to take so much more time than you think. And for a child who's able to do a lot of it himself, it's going to take way more than you think. for a child who has learning difficulties, it's going to take 10 times as much time as you think. And so don't overcommit their senior year, either you or them, and be prepared to spend a lot of time on this. Okay.
All right. Now, you know, one of the, one of the great opportunities you have in, when you apply for college is when they say, write me an essay, because that's where your personality, that's where your student's personality, rather, comes out to the fore, that they can see, this is what makes this person different, unique, valuable for our college experience. And so, you know, when you see the essay prompt, you think, oh, I don't want to write an essay. People get, you know, this, no, this is an invitation. Show me why you're special. And trust us, you want to be special to that college admissions office, because they get a million perfect SAT scores. They want to see individuals.
And so tell the story. Don't be trite. You know, nobody wants to hear from a smart aleck 17-year-old. And they've heard a million stories about why I want to become an engineer, why I want to become a doctor because I got sick when I was 16, whatever. You know, you want to tell something that's deeply personal to you. And don't be afraid to get help. It is everyone who hires a college coach to get into college, all the wealthy people out there are getting people to edit their essays. They are getting people to look at it and say, you spelled this wrong. You know, this would make sense if this sentence were higher up in the essay. Have you considered switching those paragraphs? There's another, you know, could you tell me more about this? Do not be afraid to give your kids that kind of feedback. As homeschoolers, we're, and many of us are Christians, we're very concerned. We don't want to cheat. That's not cheating.
No, I mean, you got to consider that an essay on an application form, that's a creative writing opportunity. It is not a timed test. It's not like an essay on an advanced placement exam. This is something where you work it over, you hone it, you polish it up, you make it an absolute jewel of your creative ability.
Yes.
And get all the help you need.
Yes. All right. We're going to race through this because I want you to talk about dealing with the college and some other things. Okay. Repeat after me. All contact with the college must be made by the parent, by the children, not the parents.
Not the parents.
Not the parents. All contact with the college must be made by the student. There is a raft of helicopter parents today. There's a zillion of them. You don't want to be one. Homeschoolers are stereotyped as being one.
And it's not a homeschool problem, but they it's expected that homeschoolers maybe over shelter their kids and baby them along. And so it really, it's the right thing to do for your student to be the one that walks in the door, that introduces everybody behind them, that shakes hands and is the one sitting closest to the interviewer.
And hear me on this. This is really hard, often, especially for our struggling learners. There's no alternative. All contact has to be made by the student. That means if you're making a college visit, the student picks up the phone and calls and says, I want to make a college visit. That means when you walk in the door in the Office of Admissions, the student walks in first, introduces himself or herself and the parents. When you meet the professor, student introduces themselves and the parents. Student does most of the talking. You can make that a lot easier by doing role playing and say, okay, you're going to make this call. Let's practice it. You pretend to be the admissions officer. I'll pretend to be you. Now let's trade. Okay. You absolutely have to do this. If you do it, it will help your child get a scholarship because they want leaders. Now you've got your acceptances back.
Ta-da! The fat envelope came.
The fat envelope came. The fat envelope came from several colleges. Now you've got to make a decision. What do you do?
Okay. Well, first you got to find out what kind of support there is for your student with a disability.
And this is so important. And so the student should get on the phone. You can find them the phone number. You can coach them about it, but should get on this phone and contact the Office of Disability Support Services. Every single college has one and say, hi, I've been accepted to your college. I'm considering coming. Can I talk to you about the support you have for my learning disabilities? Now, this may be easier if you meet in person. And so this is a great thing to do on a college visit. When you should make a college visit when you're before you apply, then you should make a college visit after you're accepted to decide if that's where you want to go. At that point, the second one is when you make the visit to disability support. You're going to need to be, you are visiting the parent as the guidance counselor, as the teacher. So you're going to be professional. You're going to be the one who's going to not be, you better treat my child right, which is the way you feel inside, but you're going to come to them as one educational professional to another, and you're going to bring data, you're going to bring that testing, you're going to bring the educational plan, and don't assume that they are enemies. Assume that they're friends.
In fact, our experience at the college level is the disability support office really is on your student's side.
Yes.
That's what they exist for. And your student's needs are not a distraction. That's their purpose.
And it is, they can be such a help to you. And so you want to talk to them and say, well, these are what we've been doing in high school. These are my concerns. How will this be handled? You know, can you get any help for this issue? And it's been amazing what these people can do for you. Let's talk about what they can do. All right. Mm-hmm. You can get all kinds of accommodations at college. Some of the accommodations that our son and his friends have gotten, actually, I think our son's gotten all of these. He has been allowed to take his test privately instead of in a classroom with extended time on his testing and his assignments.
Okay. he's been given an opportunity to use a scribe to some extent, or to use a computer, which if you haven't discovered this, we found that with dysgraphic kids, oftentimes using the keyboard is absolutely liberating, that using the keyboard is different than using a pen or pencil. So that's an option that's often available.
And lots of times, sometimes they can give you, for the important test and the important essays, often they'll provide a scribe they can dictate to, but the funding for that tends to be limited because it's very time consuming. Mm-hmm. And so usually they'll only reserve that for like exams and big tests, but allow them to do other things on the computer or by dictating, like to Dragon Naturally Speaking. Mm-hmm. Often they'll buy your child audiobooks. They'll provide tutors. They'll let them have spelling aids, even in foreign language class. Mm-hmm. They will instruct professors to overlook the grammar and spelling on test. We have found that they will even hire students to take notes for our son.
Yeah, it was really neat. The way that worked out was the disabilities office contacted professors and said, we have a student with a disability, can't take notes effectively for himself. And so we need one of your brightest students who would be willing to work for pay. Sometimes they don't even ask for volunteers. They said, we will pay one of your students to take notes for this unnamed classmate.
Yes.
And your student's name never enters into this equation at all. And that's been a real help for one of our students.
Oh, and they don't even know who's doing it.
No.
The student thing that turns it into the disability office, our son picks it up from the disability office. What a blessing. And so that preserves their dignity.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the experience. They've been accepted, they've enrolled, they are on campus. What is life going to be like?
Okay. First of all, you need to encourage your students to develop relationships. There's really nothing more important to their academic success in college than developing relationships with the people in disability services and with their professors.
And it's really easy to want to just blend in with the crowd, be a face in the mob. Do not, in this case, your student's success in college is going to depend a lot on the people who know your student.
So how do they develop relationships? By going by their office and sitting down and talking to them. With disability services, by talking to them like people, telling them what's going on in their classes and how the struggles they're having, the successes they're having. Get them invested in your success. Mm-hmm. With professors, talking to them about the subject. Going and chatting with them during their office hours about questions you had in class or to discuss something further you learned in class. My word, that is such a help. Mm-hmm. Because when they know you, they will go the extra mile for you.
Now, oftentimes you have a choice of professors, especially of like freshman level classes and things. Go ask the disability services, do you have any input? I can go to Professor Jones, Professor Smith. Do you have any thoughts on these two? Because they'll know, are these professors that have been very accommodating or professors that have been sort of tough to work with?
For example, one of our sons ended up with a professor in, I think it was a Spanish class, that could not comprehend the idea of twice exceptional. And so her attitude was, you are clearly intelligent. You were freshman class president. You're on the president's list. This wanting accommodations is bull and I won't give it to you. Now, that's illegal, but she had tenure and they couldn't make her.
Yeah.
You know, and so he ended up dropping that class. Mm-hmm. So what you've got to do before the drop ad date, yep. See, 2 to 3, 10 days to 3 weeks into the semester will be what they call the drop ad deadline. And that means any time before that, you can drop a class or add a class with no penalty.
So if you've got a class and you realize, whoa, I'm in the wrong place altogether, if you drop it before that deadline, it disappears off your record. It's like you never existed. Or if you say, wow, Dr. Smith is going to kill me, but Dr. Jones looks accommodating, I'll change from Section A to Section B, and that's just a matter of course. Now, after that, you can still drop courses later in the semester, but you can't add them later in the semester. And after a certain deadline, you can't drop it without it showing up.
Well, yeah, if you drop after the drop add date, it'll count as a withdrawal in your transcript. And that can harm you and your GPA depending on the college. So talk to your professors about the accommodations you need before the drop add date. Now, your Office of Disability Support should send an email to each one of your professors stating the accommodations that they are supposed to make for you. They may not have read it very carefully. So you want to go in, or they may not really comprehend how that's going to work. Mm-hmm. So you want to go in and express a desire to learn the subject. Okay. Express that your excitement to learn the subject. Talk mm-hmm. about how much you want to learn from them. Because if you want to learn and participate, if you're sitting up front asking questions, you're involved, they're going to be a lot more willing to make exceptions for you. Explain the accommodations you're going to need, and not in a demanding way, but, sir, because of my learning disability, the Office of Disability Support says that I should blank, blank, blank. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about how that's going to work in your class? I want to make sure that this is not too big a problem for you. Because what you're asking is, are you going to work with me, or do I need to get out of your class? Mm-hmm. If you have questions about a professor, or a professor doesn't seem willing to work, talk to disability support. Sometimes they need the disability support guy to pick up the phone and say, hey, Fred, look, this is a great kid. You really want to help him. This is what he needs. It's not going to be a big problem for you. We'll help you do it. But you've got to be proactive. Now, let's go.
Problem professors do happen.
They do happen.
And you can't predict it. Honest to goodness, you might think old school means hard-edged and unhelpful. Sometimes they're the ones who are the most gracious and laid back. Sometimes it's the young professors trying to establish just how rigorous they're going to be that can be the most difficult. So you just have to look at it case by case.
Typically, problem professors are either going to be brand new professors just out of graduate school or the ones who've been around forever. And again, you can have great ones that are one of those two types, but typically you're going to find the problem ones among those that population. If you have a professor, some of them will out and out say, I just don't believe you need any accommodations. Mm-hmm. And our son faced that because he's really outgoing and he comes across, well, he looks like Captain America and kind of comes across as Captain America. Mm-hmm. And so it's really hard for some people to comprehend that he has extreme learning disabilities.
It's like if you go to the doctor and you look all put together and healthy, they treat you differently than if you obviously are sick. Well, yeah. Okay, you don't wear your disability on your sleeve all the time. And so some professors are skeptical. They shouldn't be, but fact is.
They are. If you can, change sections before that drop-ad deadline. Ask disability services to intervene. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, though, it's a class you've got to have to graduate and there's no other sections, or you didn't find out how horrible they were till after the drop-ed deadline.
Now, here's a secret. There are resources that will help you, and frankly, most students ignore them.
Yes.
Okay? So things like have the graduate students are doing study sessions. What's the SI? Remind me of that.
Supplemental instruction.
Supplemental instruction. Or tutors, like the writing center on campus, the research desk at the library. These people are there to help students of all sorts.
So how you'll find out about that, the teacher will say, oh, my graduate student's offering a study session at 7 p.m. on Tuesday night. Do not miss it. Okay, because that, sometimes they'll be working off an old test and will walk you through the old test and you'll get totally prepared for the new test. So, you know, go to the supplemental instruction sessions. You can ask disability services for a tutor and they will hire you a tutor if someone isn't already doing it.
And, you know, every professor has times when they say, I'm going to be in my office every Tuesday from 3 to 5 p.m. or whatever. You know, go by and see the professor, if nothing else, just to check in and have a little bit of face-to-face contact so they remember who you are.
Well, you know, foreign languages, well, Chinese was easy for our son. Spanish was really, really hard. I don't know why. But he got to know his Spanish professor, not the one that he had to drop her class, but a different one, and got to know him well. And he made accommodations even beyond what was required to help Sam get through that class. If they know you, they'll help you. If they don't expect any help. And that may mean you have to give up some of your free time to invest in relationships. It's worth it. So what do you do if you get the horrible professor and all those things aren't working? You have a choice. You can either just endure the class and accept that you may get a C. And that's really hard for some kids. Our son has a great GPA and he gets frantic if he thinks he's going to make a B. You can endure and accept. Sometimes you have no choice. Or you may be able to get special permission to drop without a W by taking it to the faculty committee. And that's a complex situation. You'll have to ask disability services. Our son had to do that in the class with the Spanish professor because she didn't show how horrible she was until after drop ad. And so what he did, he couldn't handle having the C for the grade. And so what he did is he went and asked, he made an appeal to the faculty academic committee. He wrote a long letter explaining the situation, explaining the fact that he was a very good student and why his disability prevented him from doing well. And he got permission and it didn't count on his transcript.
All right. Your day-to-day life and as a college student, you're going to have to just basically invent a new lifestyle once you get on campus. And it's important you recognize this. Your time in study and in homework and all the rest of that is simply going to be more time involved than the average student. Okay. That just kind of comes with the territory and your special need. So you need to just take that into account and you need to have a backup plan to help with editing papers and things.
For example, I usually help our son with editing because I can read however he spells it. Mm-hmm. I've been reading all my life. Mm-hmm. But we're speakers and we travel a lot during the spring semester speaking at conferences. And so he's got a backup. He has a couple of his older siblings have volunteered to be his editor. You know, it might be a tutor at the college or a friend in the honors college. You know, but he needs to make sure you've got not just one person lined up for editing, but at least two.
And you know what? This is something all college students have this idea that they can get by on 4 hours of sleep forever. Honest to goodness, especially if you have a special need, a struggling learner, you need to get enough rest so that your mind and your body are able to support the demands that you got to place on it. So be regular in your habits, eat right, get some rest, get some exercise.
Now, your privacy should be protected. The Disability Support Office should go out of their way not to call you out as a student with disabilities. It may be that, and professors are not supposed to reveal that you have disabilities. Occasionally, somebody will. And that can be a problem because it's hard for some kids to understand that this kid who's doing great, who's on academic scholarship, who gets all the awards, is getting to take his test separately and getting extra time. It's, mm-hmm. you know, to them, it doesn't feel fair. They don't understand. And this happened to our son at one point that, again, that's the time to go to disability support. And disability support will inform that professor that they're breaking the law and will try to intervene on that. But expect that you're, generally your privacy is going to be protected. Get involved in stuff. You need friends too. Kids going through this need to get out and to do things. And lots of times they'll find that they're really good at stuff like that.
And you need to make church and Christian groups a real priority, you know, because it's important to get outside of this bubble that you live in as a college campus. Going to an off-campus church gives you an entirely different community where you'll have different age groups, where you'll be involved with families and not just other students. And the Christian group on campus helps you bridge from one weekend to the next, you know. So it's really important if you are a Christian believer that you get involved and get involved early. Your first week, your first 2 weeks are crucially important to get yourself connected up into that community. Change later if you need to, but start early and get your feet on the ground.
It's so important, and it's especially important for struggling learners because, you know what? They're under more stress than kids who don't have these challenges, and they need to be spiritually healthy to endure that stress. So, thrive. I want to say to the struggling kids, mm-hmm. you know what? You're not the first to think that you can succeed academically even as a struggling learner. I have a friend who's also a speaker. Her son, severely dyslexic, severely dysgraphic, just got his PhD.
Do you know Agatha Christie, the most widely read author in the English language, was blindingly dyslexic her entire life? They had to hire special editors to help her out. But she was an immensely successful author. General George Patton, one of the best commanders that ever worked in the U.S. Army, was a struggling learner, almost didn't get out of college.
Thomas Edison was sent home from school. They told him he was uneducably mentally retarded, but his mama knew that he had something special in there, and she did what it took to educate him.
You know what? You can succeed on campus. You are not defined by your learning disability. And that's important to remember because it weighs on your mind so much. Just remember, that is not the definition of you as a person. And you can succeed academically in spite of your struggle.
Yeah, our son is on the president's list. That's a step higher than the dean's list. We know lots and lots of others. You can be successful in your career. In fact, many of the most successful people in the world, the inventors, the millionaires, the people who have really just blow everybody out of the water, are people who struggled in learning. And you know what? You can keep the faith. You can succeed in life. You can thrive at college, learning disability or not. Now, while people are posting questions, I want to tell you about a couple of resources we have for you. On our site, raisingrealmen.com/shop, scroll down till you see struggling learners. We have a lot of resources. We have books. We have a CD that Sam and I did together. Mm-hmm. We have Diane Craft's materials. Heather Laurie's book on homeschooling and learning isn't easy. We have lots of resources out there because we've been there. We've done that. Mm-hmm. Sam says that the Diane Craft materials changed his life. And so we carry that. So check out on our store, our struggling learners section, and ask your questions.
There are questions out there. Why don't we roll it up and find some of those little red dots and figure out what we can do. You want to scroll down to the bottom?
Yes.
And start at the bottom?
Goodness, there's a bunch of them.
Let's answer questions in the order received.
All right.
Okay. How's that?
I'm scrolling down.
There's a tiny little advancer.
It really is. It's kind of hard to move.
The control on the screen is very small.
Any suggestions for aspiring veterinarians? Should they avoid taking courses from a community college to appear more competitive? It's okay to take some select community courses from a community college. You know what? It all depends on the situation. Do not allow a student to take community college courses in high school while also enrolled in high school unless they are prepared academically and socially.
Because academically, if it's a college course, it goes on a transcript somewhere and that lives forever. And so you want to be sure they take that seriously and make that a priority. But recognize on the community college system, so much of it is a continuing education program that your peer group may be 45-year-olds who are retraining for another trade or something. And so they're going to have to deal with some peer pressures that are a little different than dealing with other 17-year-olds.
Okay, here's a great question. Leah asks, my son is in 10th and got tested in 9th through the charter public school we homeschool through, and they said he only had a bit of a processing issue. I've done so much research, and I know he has dyslexia. Should I still test him again? I would ask for copies of the test because they may not have expressed to you the entire story, or they may not have really understood it all. And so I would ask to see copies of the test results, and that's going to give you some information. It may be, and this is one of the hard things about waiting till their 9th or 10th grade, it may be that he has accommodated so much that one of our sons, we had this problem. I did not have him tested when he was at home because I knew he had dysgraphia, but we were able to accommodate it. He did fine and he was getting a lot better. But when he got away to college, he really struggled. He was struggling to sit in class, to pay attention in class long enough. He was struggling to write. And so he went and got tested at college. The problem is he had learned to make do enough that he tested on the level of an average student in his performance academically.
Well, that was the thing that kind of clued us in on it, because we knew he was not a C-level student. This kid was like the brightest bulb in the pack.
He can read 400 pages an hour easy.
We're thinking, honestly, this guy has an A-plus intellect. Why is he only making C's? And when he went to go get tested and accommodations, that's the first thing they said. You got a C. C's passing. What's the problem? Lots of people are very happy to achieve a C, except that he was not living up to his real actual potential.
Yeah.
So, and to their credit, when they tested him, they came back and they said, "Hoo boy, you got it bad." Well, we had no idea.
Well, they said they'd never seen anybody that with worse ADD than he had.
Yay!
But he did not get the help with his dysgraphia that he should have.
Because he had worked around it for so long.
Because he didn't have a wide enough gap. And so you may want to take those results and pay for a consultation with an educational psychologist who will truly look at his ability versus his performance. Because even if there's not quite as much gap as you would expect to see, she may be able to see that he still has an issue. Mm-hmm. And so that's the problem. As they get older, they're more able to have developed workarounds, and they don't show enough gap between their performance and their ability.
I just thought of an illustration. You know, I've had glasses since I was in the third grade. But you know what? You can have a student who has a vision problem, but he's learned that if he squints really hard, he can make out what's on the blackboard. And it'd be like if he showed up, the teacher says, "I can't see the blackboard." Says, "It's maybe I need glasses." No, you don't. You can. I can tell that you can see what's on the board. Well, you know, you shouldn't have to be squinting. And so that's the same kind of thing. If you got a student who has a need, they need accommodation, even if they can work around it a lot of times, they shouldn't have to be putting all that effort in. It shouldn't be that difficult for them to work around it.
Right.
That's interfering with their ability to do the actual business of what they're supposed to be learning.
Yeah. And somebody says here that their charter school refused the IEP but wrote a 504. Yeah, it doesn't matter what it's called. Hmm. It's just an individual plan for how you're going to make accommodations for this student. Now, Lee asked us if we have an example of an IEP that we have on our website. I am actually currently working on a resource that is going to show people how to get accommodations on the SAT, ACT, and at college. And if you sign up for our newsletter, mm-hmm. Through and get the resources that we're offering. And what we're going to do is there's three downloadable resources, three audio workshops. One is called Surviving Struggling to Read. And that is my son Samuel and I talking about his struggles and what he did to overcome them and what helped and what didn't. Because he learned to read so late, he was very analytical about, well, you know, this helped, this didn't help. And what helped and didn't help socially. and then two more workshops, one called Aiming for College that goes into more detail about the college applications and about financial aid, and one called Christ in College about how to keep the faith and grow your faith in college. I'm going to post that link again for you to sign up to get those free downloads. And I will be letting you know, hopefully in the next few weeks, when that resource is done, about how to get accommodations, and that will have a sample IEP in there.
All right.
Okay. Mary Beth says, I provide accommodations, but my children refuse to use them. How do you get them to accept accommodations? I think that we have to educate them that it's not cheating as well. We have to encourage them, you know, son, this is okay. But if you had used the accommodations, it would have been great. And maybe even have them do an assignment without accommodations and then say, okay, well, let's see what happens if you dictate it to me on the next time they have an assignment, and compare the two and let them see the difference. Ultimately, you can't force them to use accommodations, but it's really, but you've got to be straight with them. You got to say, look, you know, if you have asthma and God has gifted you to be a runner, if you don't use your inhaler, you're not going to be able to win. And it's the same thing. God has given you intelligence, and you need accommodations to be able to express that intelligence. Wouldn't it be foolish of the guy who has asthma but is prepared to be a world-class runner not to use his inhaler? Well, in the same way, it's foolish for you not to use the accommodations that are available to you. Getting them to, Erica says, same question as Mary Beth, how do you get them to advocate for themselves when they go off to college? Role play.
Yep.
You have to talk with them and say, okay, this is important. And just like using the asthma analogy, that guy might be able to be a decent runner with his asthma, gasping and hacking and coughing up blood.
Mm-hmm.
But if he uses his inhaler, he's going to be a world-class runner. Do you want to be average or you want to be world-class? Because I think you've got a world-class brain.
You know, that's an important thing, is getting your struggling learner to admit that they have an issue and that the accommodation is just allowing them to level the playing field. It's not giving them an unfair advantage.
Yes.
You know, it's just a simplistic illustration might be if your job was to unload the dishwasher and put the plates on the top shelf, but you're only 4 feet tall, you may not be able to stand on the floor and pick and reach up there. Well, is it unfair for you to have a stepladder, whereas your older brother, who's a center in the high school basketball team, can put stuff on the top shelf standing in his bare feet? No, that's just a simple accommodation that recognizes something that you have no control over, your height, is something that can be overcome with a little bit of accommodation, and you can both do the job that you're there for.
Now, let's see. We had another great question here. Let me find it. Oh, scroll in here. Okay, someone said, oh, yes.
There it is.
Should I have them test it? I know they have dyslexia and dysgraphia. I've told them from the beginning they had it because an older sibling had it. Now they read and write okay, but they still struggle. If they are going to college, then you need to have them tested, because it's going to be very difficult. It's possible, but it's going to be difficult to get accommodations on the SAT and ACT and to get accommodations at college without testing. And that they may be able to do okay without the accommodations, but the difference between okay and outstanding may be $50,000 a year scholarship.
So that's worth getting the testing.
That's worth getting the testing. If you absolutely can't afford the testing, then there are ways to get help.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the Homeschool Foundation has a special needs children's fund,
mm-hmm.
and they helped us pay for Sam's testing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are ways to get help, even if it's hard to afford. Okay, just scooted by one. Let me get back here. This is so hard. Okay. Where do I find an educational psychologist at the public school? Are they obligated to test my kid?
Well, we would recommend your first stop should be hslda.org.
Yes.
Go to HSLDA's website. They have a struggling learners page, and they can help you locate homeschool understanding and homeschool friendly psychologists all over the country. That should be your first stop.
Yes. Let's see. How do you help students read faster so they can actually get through the test? One way to help kids read faster is to get them a hard copy and an audio book that is unabridged of the same book. Now, not all audiobooks are unabridged. Like, for example, if you're talking about G.A. Henney's, Jim Hodges' audiobooks are word for word. Mm-hmm. There are other people that have Henties that are not.
Right.
And so you want to get word for word and have them scan the words and read as they hear it will help them speed up. Mm-hmm. But they also can get extended time, and they can get somebody to read them the questions. They can get a reader in many cases. Mm-hmm. Now, let's see. Okay. Erica says she couldn't find anyone to give her son the ACT for one-on-one testing. He needed a reader. So he ended up taking it with extended time in a room with one other student, no reader. Yeah, we have found the ACT was more difficult to get the help that we needed than the ACT, than the SAT. Again, try different schools. Contact your school board. You know, appeal. Contact the ACT people and appeal to them.
Mm-hmm. There's one.
Yes, Emily points out that the ACT, that some students score better on the ACT and some score better than the SAT. That's so true. So have them take a ton of practice tests.
Okay.
And find out.
All right.
We just answered that one.
We just answered that one. Okay, I'll see the bullet there.
Okay.
All right. Here's Madeline.
Madeline said she wanted a note about accommodations. If you want your student to take the PSAT, you can apply for accommodations as early as ninth grade. And once the college board grants accommodations, they're valid for the rest of the high school years. That's a great idea to go ahead and do that early.
True.
Yes. And she said they did not request at that time a homeschool version of the IEP. And, you know, it depends. They have standards that they are supposed to follow. They don't always follow them. And that can be a blessing.
Okay. All right. What does Amy ask there?
Let me see here. Let's see, it's hard. You can get a referral to an educational psychologist through your pediatrician, but hslda.org is a better source of referrals because they're going to know which ones are homeschool friendly. Because some of them are not. They'll just say your child needs to be in public school. Okay.
Now, you skipped one below that.
Okay, let me see.
Yeah, see if you can get down there.
Okay.
There you go, Amy's.
What if my child is way behind in many categories? What will the school do? Will they take action? First of all, the school typically will not see any of the proof for the I think Helma might have misspoke that a little bit.
I'm sorry.
They will not see your test scores and your proof and all that. That goes to the college board, to the ACT. And so whoever is supervising your child's testing will see it. But let me tell you something. They have seen it all. They have seen kids who are functioning on a first and second grade level, definitely. And so you don't need to worry. It's going to be okay. Because the people that they get to administer the test to those kids are typically special ed teachers. Okay, now this is what I really want to address. It says, how do you quantify for grading purposes a student's lack of respect for deadlines? For example, the work is done thoroughly and well, but consistently turned in late. Should I deduct grade point for late submissions on transcripts? I think the lateness is due to his inability to stay focused and his deliberate reading and thinking style. I would not. And I know that many people would disagree with me, but the transcript should reflect your student's knowledge of the material and their ability to do that material in college. And I find that a couple of years, you know, late submission is one of two things. It's either a parenting issue where you need to institute some discipline and some consequences. And the reason they use grades for consequences in that in the schools is that's all they got. That's the only opportunities they have. Mm-hmm. if it's a parenting issue where they are just defiant, then you find a way to get their goat. You find a way, something, okay, well, you know, you took an extra day to turn this in. That's a day that you do without your smartphone or whatever. Hmm. You find a way to motivate them to do it if it's a parenting issue. If it's, this sounds like the lateness is due to his inability to stay focused and his deliberate reading and thinking style, they're going to typically get extra time in college on assignments because of that. If they can show a processing difficulty when they're tested. And so for me, I would not reflect that in the grades.
Well, that's kind of like grading what you're actually grading, you know, because taking off points for deadlines, is the course in time management, or is the course in, say, English literature, you know, and that's,
and I'm aware
that's you know, there's a tightrope you're walking on this.
But I'm aware when they get to college that some professors will grade that, you know, will grade down when things are late, and that's mm-hmm. an unpleasant fact of life that they can accommodate, they'll learn to accommodate to. I think though that many kids in those last couple of years of high school develop the maturity to be able to handle it by the time they're in college.
And that's a good point, because we homeschoolers are so, we have such expectations of our kids, and our kids, you know, do so well in so many things. Sometimes we forget the fact that, hey, you know, he is after all just 10 years old, or, you know, that we sometimes we expect more than we really have a right to expect. So the age of the child and their relative maturity does enter into that. But I mean, you are right. It could be, you know, if it's a defiance thing, that's one issue. If it's a learning struggle, that's another thing. And, you know, that's one of those reasons it's good to be sensitive to the way your child is working, you know, because like we've had children who've gone through periods of like zero focus, and we realized, you know what, we have got to provide them with more supervision, and just as simple as having them work in the same room with us.
Yeah.
So we know that they're not getting distracted by every bird that flitted past the window, by every beep that happened on somebody's cell phone. You know, sometimes they just need a little bit of coaching and supervision and run alongside you kind of behavior for a time. So, you know, be sensitive to that.
Beverly says, suggestions for user-friendly student planners to help students better plan and manage your time so they can plan and achieve their goals. That's going to really depend on your child's learning style.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our kids have used Google Calendar
yeah.
to put their assignments on and their plans on. Others use paper planners. Some have used a spreadsheet. You know, that's really going to be so much just how do they learn? You know, Hal writes things on the whiteboard at home. He uses Trello. I can't even remember Trello exists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think it depends on, you know, what works for that particular child.
One thing about it is there's so many different planners available. You can just keep trying them until you find one that works.
Yeah. So Trello is a free online planner that allows you to, like, it's kind of a Kanban system that allows you to do cards for each
right.
task.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a member of schoolhouseteachers.com, they have downloadable printable planners that mm-hmm. you can use. There's a variety of things you can use.
And some of that will depend on the age of the child, and do they have a smartphone or do they have a computer? Are they allowed or expected to be on the computer during the day?
Yeah.
Because I found that the kind of planner I use professionally depended on, did I have a desk job or did I have a field job?
Yes.
Field job, I carried a notebook around. Desk job, I liked a computer-based planner. So
yeah.
There's no one answer.
Yeah, very much so. Google Calendar is free. There's a lot of different options.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly asks, isn't the financial aid office an exception to the all contact? My oldest went on veterans benefits and we handled all that as parents. Yeah, the financial aid office is used to talking to parents. They tend to be more responsive to kids, though.
Hmm.
But yeah, they're used to talking to parents and financial aid because most people are paying for it.
Parents write checks. Well, that's true. So let's see.
Okay.
Emily has a comment.
Yeah, we should have talked about this in the session, Hal.
What?
If your child is called in for interviews for merit scholarships, should they disclose that they have a learning disability in that case? My daughter was called in for interviews at two colleges in the last few days and did not feel like she presented herself well in the interviews. Should she have talked about her learning disability, or would that be viewed as an excuse? When it comes to merit scholarships, I would generally favor revealing, because often they have essays that they're expected to do there. If they do, definitely. So we would typically one of our students would contact the person in charge of the scholarship weekend and say, I wanted to ask what to expect. And they'd say, oh, well, we have these interviews or we have essays. And based on what they're told to expect, then they can say, oh, I'm very excited to participate. I do have a question though. I have a learning disability, a diagnosed learning disability in such and such. Would it be possible for me to dictate my essay? Our son did that at several colleges, and it was never a problem. And he was offered several scholarships. The college that he's at now, he's on a full ride academic scholarship. If your child has other disabilities that may affect, like oral interviews, you know, they might need to know that. The best way to prepare them for oral interviews is role play. So let's talk real briefly about that. They need to have 3 to 5 things about themselves that they want to share.
Because they might get an open-ended question like, tell me about yourself, or tell me a story.
And so they need to have 3 to 5 kind of sound bites, things that they want to share about themselves, things that they love, passions they have, things they're interested in, what would make them a good fit for the college, what they particularly like about the college, what did they feel like they would bring to the college, things like that.
Now, this is a student version of the classic job interview situation. Yes. And one of the best resources I encountered in a professional life was a book by a man called Martin Yate, Y-A-T-E, called Knock 'Em Dead. Now, he's got a whole bunch of books in this series, but the ones about interviewing really, really encouraged me and was very successful. One of the key things I found in dealing with interviews is, as you're preparing yourself for an interview situation, is there any question that you are praying, dear Lord, don't let them ask about blank? That is one you've got to prepare for, because if they ask you that, it'll blow you out of the water. But if you are prepared to answer even the most awkward question that they're likely to even come up with, then you're home free. So that's good advice. But Martin Yates' book, Knock 'Em Dead, was really helpful with interview skills.
Yeah, some questions that tend to throw kids is, what was your least favorite subject? That throws our homeschool kids, because they're not supposed to whine at their mamas about their least favorite subjects. And they need to learn how to answer negative questions in a way that shines positively on them.
Like, can you tell me about something that you really struggle with? Can you tell me about something that you're not good at? And you could say, well, you know, one problem, sometimes you can take a difficulty that you turn into a benefit to say, like, well, sometimes I just take my studies too seriously, and I don't always allow the time for social interaction that I want to, but I'm working on that. You know, that says, ooh, this is a super serious student. They're academically inclined. Okay.
Yeah. Another thing you might say is, you might say, well, you know, I have a tendency to be too much of a perfectionist, and sometimes assignments take me longer than they should. Yeah. You know, so you take a negative, you find something a way to answer the question with a positive, answer.
Positive takeaway.
Yes. Okay. Someone asked here, my daughter did have an essay portion at her scholarship competition yesterday. We did not mention her learning disability. Is it too late to contact them now? No. I would have your daughter call the person in charge of the scholarship competition. Usually that's someone in admissions, and say, you know, at this college, at the scholarship competition last weekend, I realized that I probably should have told you in advance that I have a learning disability in such and such. And so I was concerned that my essay did not adequately reflect my ability. And I just wanted you to know that I had a disability. And I'm sorry that I didn't disclose that and ask for accommodations in advance. I really didn't know that I could. So yeah, I don't think that would hurt. She's just got to be sure to say it in a way that doesn't sound like she's making excuses, but just say, it needs to be all be positive. You know, like, I wasn't sure that it adequately reflected my ability. not, I know it was terrible, you know.
No, no, put it, yeah, put it as positive as possible. You know, because when you're in the application and admissions process, particularly going through the scholarship program and interviews for honors programs and things, you know, this is very much like a job interview, and you want to be as positive and tell as forward-looking a story as you can about yourself. So like your illustration about the deadlines, you know, if you are habitually a tardy person, you don't say, oh, deadlines, man, deadlines kill me. I'm just terrible with deadlines. That's all negative. But to say, like you said, sometimes I get so focused on what I'm doing that I lose track of time. You know, sometimes I'm a perfectionist, and it's I have to watch my schedules really carefully because I can get really deep into detail. Okay, that leaves a positive impression of your admitted difficulty.
Yes.
So.
Okay, now Chantel asked, the kids who bully my son are all very active Christians. What do I tell my son to do? First of all, you got to reassure your son that people are sinners, and that sometimes people who claim the name of Christ aren't Christians, or they're Christians despite how they act, but because of the grace of God. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I just want to say, do what it takes to get your son out of the situation, because bullying is absolutely devastating. And I know people in their 50s that are still struggling with what they endured as a child being bullied. I'm going to post a link here to an article that we did recently about bullying. And there's a podcast we did too, didn't we, Hal?
Yes, we did.
I will post that too. Yeah, yeah, I'll find it in just a second.
You know, the people that say sticks and stones may break my bones, they don't realize that sticks and stones go away, but the words live on forever.
Yes.
And so, you know, you say, well, at least he's not getting beat up. Well,
yeah, he is. And
he's getting beat up in a way that will come back to him in the dark nights for years to come.
Yes.
So yeah, take it very seriously and recognize, you know, sometimes we think because we took our kids out of the evil institutions that somehow they're not going to be subject to bad peer influences or bullying, cyber stalking, or anything else. The fact is, yeah, our kids can be targeted too. And our kids can sometimes get into trouble that we thought we protected them from. So we have to stay vigilant. Don't feel like, whoo, we solved that problem. No, actually, we maybe just mitigated it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chantel asks, what's the difference between an IEP and a 504 that my son has a 504? Can he get special accommodations for SAT and later on in college? Any documentation of the child's needs and the accommodations that are being made is what you need. Testing is essential. An IEP or 504 or any, even one mom has written up. They just need to know what accommodations has the child been using. So, yeah, that should be fine. Can I read? You want to read this
one? No, go ahead.
Too far away. Okay.
Yeah, I'm kind of far away here.
Okay. Giovanna asks, my son has an eye tracking problem where the letters move. It's affected his reading, writing, and academics. However, he's graduated already and is in his first year of college. How can I help him if he has no doctor saying he's got the eye tracking problem? It was an eye therapist who said so, plus he would tell me that the letters move. Your son can go to the Office of Disability Support and at his college and describe the problems he's asking and saying, can you test me? I am struggling to keep up with my academics. I'm not having any problem understanding it, but just my reading is so slow that because of this, the letters move around on the page for me. Can you get me help? And in most cases, the Office of Disability Support at the college will be able to test him and will be able to grant him accommodations. And that's what our son that I didn't have tested while he was home did when he got away to college. And it's harder to get accommodations then. Sometimes you'll have to pay for it, sometimes not. But it's harder to get accommodations then. But if you're to that point, Go ahead and go for it.
Do what you got to do. I mean, you can't change the past. If it's still in the future, you can make decisions about the future.
Yeah.
But you play the ball where it lies.
Okay.
Okay, Melissa.
My daughter is 19 and would like to do running start. She can do that in Washington State up until 21 years old. She has dyslexia, but has never been tested by an educational psychologist. Is it too late to do that? No, it is not too late to do that. I don't know what Running Start is because we're in North Carolina. They don't have that program here. But if she is of college age, I would go again to the disability support office. They call it different things on different campuses. It's typically going to have disability in the name. It might say Office of Educational Support or something. Mm-hmm. You can ask someone in administration where it is. Have her go say, I've always known I had this issue. Now I want to go to college. I'm struggling. How can I get tested? Sometimes they can test you right there.
All right.
Let's see.
And there's one.
Okay. I just learned about a service called Learning Ally. There's a cost, but they provide text and audiobook form. Yes, we use audiobooks like crazy.
Yes, we do. And some are, you know, some of the publishers have, you don't need to get them specially prepared. Like, you know, I know Apologia Science is famous for doing audiobook versions of their high school science textbooks.
Yeah, many homeschool curriculums will have audiobooks. We have a lot of audiobooks on our site mm-hmm. for classic literature that Hal and I have done mm-hmm. because they've been so useful to our kids. So check out our site, raisingwomen.com/audiobooks, mm-hmm. and you'll find audiobooks there. Audiobooks are tremendously helpful for kids that are having dyslexia. And if your child is still struggling with reading comprehension, audiobooks are wonderful for helping that. Because most of us, their kids have audio processing disorders, but for most of us, we can understand a higher level of language hearing it spoken than we can reading it. Mm-hmm. And so particularly old audiobooks like Hero Tales that we have, mm-hmm. the classic literature we have, mm-hmm. J. Henney's old audiobooks, those have very complex language. For example, I remember typing a page of a G.A. Henney novel into Word and checking the reading level.
Yeah.
By today, it was written for 10 or 11 year olds. By today's standards, it rates as college level reading. And so hearing that complex language in an audiobook trains our kids to pay attention through the entire paragraph and to be able to follow that thought and that language. Mm-hmm. So audiobooks are super useful, even for just entertainment audiobooks.
You know, case in point, have you ever listened to recorded versions of the Bible? Like, I still say Bible on tape. I'm a dinosaur. But if you listen to a recorded version of the Bible, some of those books, like some of Paul's letters, you'll discover new things because you've never read them the way that they're phrased if you read them out loud. So that they're very useful, you know, even for those of us who read very well.
Okay. What technology is there to help with dyslexia? I heard you mention Dragon and Lightscribe. Can you give some examples of what's available? There are programs which will you speak into a mic and it will transcribe it into written language. If you try these, do not be disturbed at first. Because they have a measure of artificial intelligence and they will learn. And so the transcription may not be very good at first, but as you correct it, it'll get better. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a while to get the program used to you and your voice. There are other programs, I don't remember what they're called, but for example, at Sam's College, they told him about a program that would, he could get an ebook and use that program to read the ebook aloud to him.
Well, I know, I think Adobe will read PDF files
yeah.
in certain times. And also, I think Google Docs has some voice recognition capability.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to make it work really well for me, but that may just be me.
Also, they have spelling apps and things that, they gave Sam some kind of device that would help him to spell things. Uh-huh. And they gave him a device, like he was allowed to use an online dictionary in his Spanish class to help him spell things. Mm. So there's some cool new things available. Leah said they met with their son, and because he's so charming and intelligent, they said he was smart and just needed a try harder. They did accommodate him with testing, but would not diagnose him as dyslexic. if they put, they don't use the term dyslexic anymore in this testing or dysgraphic. It's like specified learning disability in the area of reading, or specified learning disability in the area of writing, or non-specified learning disability other, and things like that. I don't know why they do that, but they do. A diagnosis like that is equivalent to a diagnosis of dyslexia or dysgraphia, and will get him the same help. He needs to say, now what if he did, if they did diagnose him with those things, he needs to say, what accommodations can I get? If they did not diagnose him with those things, it's hard. And he may be able to get some success to, if he gets to know his professors personally by going to their office hours, proving he's interested, sitting up front, asking questions, his professors may be willing to help him out with that. That's what our son was able to do, because yeah, he, his testing did not get him what he needed in college, because he had learned to make enough adaptations himself. So yeah, you can, they can be tested in college. It's just harder to get accommodate. It's harder for them to test at a level that they will offer much in the way of accommodations. It's easier when they're younger.
Now, Julie asks a great question, and we've got a great story about that. She said, do you ever recommend a gap year?
Well, there's kind of two kinds of gap years.
Well, yeah.
A gap year can be they've graduated from high school, and now they're going to do something else for a year and then go to college. I think that's really useful, but they need to do something useful during that time.
Now, and by useful, just something with purpose. Like we had a friend whose son graduated from high school, and he says, my dream is I want to through hike the Appalachian Trail. So the year between high school and college, he walked the entire length of the Appalachian Trail. Okay, so he's got something he did with that time. He's got a story to tell about it, some kind of self-discovery mission or whatever. You know, don't say, I want to take a year off because I'm tired of school.
Yeah.
You know, you go do something with that year, because it's meant to be a growing up period.
Now, there's another question, though. What about if he's just, if they're just not ready for college? Two of our sons, for one reason or another, I have thought could benefit from another year of high school. And so, like, the one we've talked about the most during the session, Sam, I went to him in what would have been his junior year, and I said, look, I can graduate you next year with a perfectly adequate high school education, but your abilities have grown so much in the last year that I think if you waited, if you stayed home an extra year, that you would graduate with an excellent high school education and maybe get scholarships. And I let him make that decision.
And it wasn't overnight. He had to think and pray over that for
about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Finally, he said, yeah, I want to graduate a year late. And he graduated a year late, and he got a full ride scholarship to college. And he got multiple scholarships, both academic and athletic scholarship offers. So it was a really, taking that extra year was a real positive thing for us. And what I did is I just counted the last 4 years that he stayed at home as his high school. And I don't think any college even questioned his age at all. It's not unusual to put boys in school a year late, you know, or to start it, or for a child to miss a year because of an illness or something.
Well, frankly, I think that happens with a lot of athletes. They'll play one more year of eligibility at the high school level so they can bulk up and get their speed up to compete more at the collegiate. And you know, here's another, you know, special needs doesn't always mean difficulties. We had a very precocious student who had all the credits that he could have graduated when he was 16, I think. But we looked at him and said, you know what? He would benefit from some more social development, maturing in that realm. And so what we did was like broaden out his education, say, let's take a few additional courses in this area. Let's look a little bit to either side of it and see some other things that will enrich your preparation before he went to college. And so, you know, and he graduated on the normal schedule, even though maybe from a credit standpoint, he could have graduated a year or 2 years early.
Yeah. Do what's best for your child. Marie asks, how do you encourage a shy, struggling learner that has trouble retaining information, but I've never tested her for ADHD or whatever? If she's having trouble retaining information beyond the preteen years, because all preteens have trouble retaining information because their brains are going through tremendous change. The part of the brain that governs executive functions drastically remodels during the preteen years.
Which means it's sorry, I am closed for business. Pardon my dust.
And so you will talk to them and you'll say, honey, go get my car keys. And 45 minutes later, you'll find them wandering around the house. You'll say, where are my car keys? And they're like, what? Oh, yeah. Where'd you say they were? And you begin to think they've got a huge issue. That's different.
Yeah.
That's normal during the preteen years. If you've got a preteen, we have an online masterclass called Bootcamp 9 to 12 that will help you to cope with the changes of the preteen years.
Oh, and it'll help your student cope.
And it is now for boys and girls.
Right.
So if you have one in that stage, I would highly recommend that you sign up for Bootcamp.
Yeah.
If you have a child who is having trouble retaining information beyond that, I would absolutely have them tested because a processing disorder can cause that. You know, there are memory issues that can cause that. There's a variety of things. Knowing what is causing it can help you to help them and also can help them to get accommodations, like they might need extra time when tested. So, yeah, if it's preteen years, maybe normal. If it's past the preteen years, probably ought to do testing.
You know, we've got to get past, there's sometimes a tendency to say, I don't want to ask the question because the answer might be very discouraging. Well, we got to get past that because it's just like saying, you know, that lump under my armpit, I don't want to go to the doctor. He might tell me it's cancer. Duh.
Yeah.
You know, don't you want to know? Yeah. If your child has a problem, let's find out what the problem is so you can help them deal with the problem.
Emily says she's never looked into our resources because we're associated with Raising Real Men, and she has two daughters. Well, our first book was called Raising Real Men, and so that's what everything is labeled as. But we have six sons and two daughters, and we have a lot of resources for both boys and girls and parents of boys and girls. Mm-hmm. By the time it got to that point, though, it was too late to rebrand.
Well, we had six boys first, one after another. And so we wrote the book about the time we were graduating the first one. And that's why that's sort of our thumbprint.
Deanna says, we have one son that's 11. And I suspect he has some level of dyslexia, but have been reluctant to have him tested because of labeling. Are there avenues of testing just for our benefit of knowing at this point? You know, I felt the same way. I was worried. I didn't want him labeled, but and I didn't want to be involved with the public schools. Yes, there are many places that you can have them privately tested by a private educational psychologist where the results go to you and you only until you're ready to share them.
That's right. And you decide whether to reveal those to anybody, including your student.
Yes.
Although we would say we would encourage
you to do
that. I
would generally recommend sharing it with your student. HSLDA.org has a special needs group, and they keep a database of educational psychologists that are homeschool friendly that can help you. If you're homeschooling and a struggling learner, HSLDA is a good resource anyway. People are more likely to think you shouldn't be homeschooling if your child is not doing what everybody else is doing.
And they've got a whole staff of people. We know them all, and they are outstanding people and very empathetic, and they're all homeschool moms themselves.
Yeah, and they can help you, and they can help you legally too if you have issues.
Ooh, that's a nice thing.
Now, don't worry about labeling. I would, if you're possibly able to afford it, you're likely to get better and more extensive testing signing up for private testing. So I would recommend that. And yeah, it's not going to go to anybody but you. There's really no downside. And knowing what issues they have can help you to accommodate. Like once I finally understood Sam had dyslexia, I was able to seek out Diane Kraft's materials that helped us so much. Her reading package was just incredible for us, particularly the Brain Integration Therapy Manual.
Well, the resources we found with that are doing a lot of the same things that the professional psychologists do for therapy, but you can do them at home. There's nothing magic about them. It's just knowing what they are.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Deborah asked a great question.
Yes.
I have a neuropsych evaluation. Do you think I can apply for accommodations, or would you still go through a guidance counselor? Is the college board more receptive to working with school systems? you really can't go through the guidance counselor. You will need to know the guidance counselor because they're going to be the ones actually administering the test, but all the accommodation requests for the SAT, every bit of it, will go through the college board. For the ACT, you're going to have a signature from a guidance counselor, but you go straight to the college board through the paper application process, and you don't go through the guidance counselor, though you will be working with the guidance counselor later to get them tested. But to get accommodations, you'll go straight to college board. And hi, Kylie.
Oh, there's our friend from down under.
We've talked to Kylie in some of our own online classes.
Yes. Okay.
So what options do you give your special learner if they do not want to go to college? I would find out first whether it is why they don't want to go to college. Because for some of them, it's fear. And if God has gifted that young man to be the next Thomas Edison, or you know, to be the next Albert Einstein, who also had learning disabilities, I want to encourage him to go to college. But it may be that God has more gifted him to start his own business or to begin a programming shop or something. You know, I'd want to know why and talk that through with them. One thing we talked about last week during the webinar that we did is getting a big whiteboard and listing all their interest and all their strengths and talents, and then brainstorming career paths that use different combinations of those interest and talents. And so, you know, I don't think everybody needs to go to college. We need HVAC people. I love my air conditioning. We need plumbers. We need guys who start lawn businesses. We need all kinds of people in this world. You want to find out why, though, and really look at what the child's ability is and where their gifts are, because there's some gifts you can't use outside college. You know, you can't be an engineer without going to college. You can't be a doctor without going to college. So, you know, you want to find out why and look at that particular child's interest and abilities. I know a very successful contractor, very wealthy, successful contractor who had severe dyslexia. In fact, never learned to read because he was in this public school system and didn't get the help he needed. And yet he's a very successful businessman. Okay.
And you know, one other option too is you might be able, if they're hesitant about the idea of going to a 4-year college, suggest a community college near home where there's more familiar things to tie in. And then they, you know, either they're on the path for getting an associate's degree, which opens a whole bunch of doors, or they may say, I can do this. This isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. You know, so that's one other option.
Maria says, my daughter, who's a senior, refused any accommodations for dyslexia because at the school they would put her in a room where students with all kinds of other problems, including emotionally disturbed students. She preferred to do the test without accommodations rather than put up with it. You know, I understand how she feels. And this is, having to live like that all the time is one reason that homeschooling is great. But for even for tests, I told my son, who had some of the same concerns, look, it's one day. And you can endure anything for one day. Because you and I both know that you're going to score a lot better and be more likely to get scholarships if you get your accommodations. And for some of the tests, he was able to test completely by himself, and that was hugely helpful. That is something that you should always request. You should request individual testing. Usually they won't give you as many accommodations as you ask for when you ask for accommodations, so ask for the world, and maybe they'll compromise on what they really need. So, yes, Reading Ally can help with audiobooks and words appearing at the same time. Yes.
Are there any more questions up there?
Rhonda says, Dr. Wild said yesterday that girls do better on ACT and boys on SAT. We have found it all over the map. We've had boys that did well on the SAT and boys that did well on the ACT. I think it depends on the way their brains work.
Our girls are not to that level yet. Yes. So
I'm glad y'all are finding this useful.
Okay.
The charter school took 4 years to finally offer the testing and set up an IEP. Then the specialist delivered a multiplication table to my daughter for the test. She was horribly embarrassed to be singled out, especially when there are no multiplication problems on the test. How should I have handled this? This is hard. I would say, first of all, that's kind of ridiculous. Two things. I would confront the charter school and I would say, you know that HIPAA regulations do not allow you to reveal a student's special needs diagnosis. And you embarrassed my daughter when you provided this inadequate accommodation in public in front of other students. The school messed up there, and they messed up really big, like can get them in federal trouble big.
One thing you need to remember, you know, when Christ said that we need to be as wise as serpents and innocent as doves, This is really a case of that, because we need to understand how this system works and recognize that there are a lot of things that are available as a recourse that we would not choose to do ourselves. For example, we're not as likely to throw somebody into a lawsuit situation, but they know very well that there are people who do.
Yes.
And so they will respond if we just remind them, hey, this is a legal issue. We don't have to call a lawyer.
Right.
You know, just to remind them, this is a legal issue. You are putting the school itself in some hazard to do this.
Yeah, and you can do that politely. You can say, you know, my daughter was very embarrassed when you delivered the multiplication table. And I am concerned, first of all, that's an inadequate level of accommodations.
Yeah.
And secondly, that you exposed her learning disability diagnosis to the other students. And isn't that against HIPAA regulations? Mm-hmm. Now, you say that, they're going to get scared.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so you can be super polite, but make sure they know that's not kosher.
Mm-hmm.
For your daughter, you say, you know, I understand. At your age, everybody wants to be the same. You know what? You're not.
Mm-hmm.
And there are kids that can't run as fast as you can, or look at whatever skill set she has.
Right.
She's great at something. So there are kids there that aren't as good as you at this. And you know what? Mm-hmm. They know it. They know it. You know it. It's okay. And the school should not have done that. And I'm so sorry, honey. And I'm going to talk to them, but you need to remember God made you special. And he made you different than everybody else, and that's okay. And I know it's hard. They don't want to be embarrassed. But to a certain degree, they're going to have to get over being embarrassed.
Because their people are going to say things thoughtlessly.
Yeah.
Not necessarily being unkind. It's just like, you know, when I was diagnosed with cancer and I was in treatment with cancer, how often we have somebody start to tell us an anecdote from their own history and they get halfway through the story and realize, oh, wait a minute, my relative died. That's not an encouraging story. They didn't mean badly. They're just thoughtless. And you just got to learn to smile and let it go sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Okay.
Well, Lisa's here. She had to explain the peanut allergy to the school district's own lawyer so the lawyer could explain the situation to school. Very friendly. No threats were made.
Yeah.
The school understood. Lee, we are running out of time. Do we need to stop at the top of the hour, or can we keep going?
Yes, I was just going to type you a note, but I do think that we should probably finish up now. I know people are starting to leave for dinner, so I don't see any additional questions. I sort of feel like you got to them.
There were a few we didn't get to.
Okay. I would encourage them to reach out and email you. Can you give your email address, please?
You know, a better option for getting answers for this, because we're drowned in email. Yeah. A better option is to go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/raisingrealmen.
Mm-hmm.
And they can either ask it on the page, or if it's private and they want to be, they want to keep it without everybody knowing who is asking it, they can hit message the page, and that will send it to us privately, and we can answer there. Or lots of times what I do is I'll post their question privately to the page so they get lots of input, and I'll answer it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and people have found that's really useful.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm seeing a lot of camaraderie even in the chat as we've been going today. And I just want to say thank you so much. You know, people were messaging me privately about how meaningful this was and how thankful they were for you and for your work. And people were frantically trying to get their friends to join because it was so important. And I can't thank you enough, both of you, Hal and Melanie, for coming and helping us out today. It was really marvelous. Really.
Also, Lee, if you could send me a copy of the chat when you save it, then I might be able to address some of these things on our blog in coming weeks.
Oh, okay. I'll try to do that. I'm not sure that I can, but I am not the technical one.
Okay.
But I will give it my best shot. Well, anyway, so thank you very much for coming today. And I do really appreciate your time. And I know that everybody else appreciated it as well. And you've been a huge part of the information that parents needed. And I am personally very thankful for you.
Oh, thank you.
We really appreciate the opportunity, Lee. And it's been great talking with all of you out there. And we hope we'll see you around. You know, if you subscribe with our newsletter and let us stay in touch, we'd love to get to know you better. And, you know, maybe we can answer your questions another time, too.
Yep. So. Yeah, sounds great. Okay, guys, we'll talk to you next time. Thanks so much again. Bye-bye, everybody.
Y'all take care. Bye-bye.